Welcome to the Andy Staples Show. We got a schedule in the Big 12, Ari. This is big news. We've been waiting for this for a long, long time. And, you know, this is a tea leaves thing because the thought is if it's just a 2023 schedule, then it probably means that Texas and Oklahoma wind up in the SEC in 2024.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just a 2023 schedule. So I would imagine those negotiations remain ongoing. My question this entire time was, how badly will the Big 12 try to screw Oklahoma and Texas on the schedule? Which, again, I'm not saying that is a bad thing from the Big 12, because if I were in charge of the Big 12 or in charge, like running the athletic department at a school that remains in the Big 12, I would do the same thing to them.
You'd want
to
make it this is hard as humanly possible to have a successful season.
Yes. So I feel like with Oklahoma, they are attempting that. Like, you get to go to Cincinnati for their first game as a Big 12 school.
Then
you get to go to Provo in November. And oh, by the way, you can turn right around and play TCU after that.
The funniest thing is that if you were going to have the new Big 12 members on the schedule with the programs that are leaving, having Oklahoma play in Provo as the finale of the season is kind of a tough place to play, I bet. Especially if it's not really the finale.
They do play TCU the following week. But now, remember, because Oklahoma was going to start a home-and-home with Georgia this season, the return date wasn't for a long time. So the SEC was like, no, just cancel that, because one of those games is when you'll both be conference teams anyway. So they would have played Georgia, but they don't play Georgia now. Now they've got Arkansas State, SMU, and at Tulsa as their non-conference. But at Cincinnati, in the Bearcats' first Big 12 game, feels like Nippert's going to be rocking on September 23rd.
It will. You know, the thing that's funny to me is that if you look at the four newcomers, BYU, UCF, Cincinnati, and Houston, they are in a legit Power 5 conference now, as it pertains to the inclusion of Texas and Oklahoma, and there's no build-up time. So these programs are still built like a Group of Five program, and I think that the most entertaining thing about this is, for all the people who said 2 years ago that Cincinnati wouldn't have made the playoff if they played in a Power 5 schedule, or any other time, you were going to see a legit Group of Five teams that are very good.
Now, remember,
playing
Luke
an actual
Fickle
Power
leaving,
5 schedule.
Luke Fickle leaving,
right,
and then taking a lot of players, a lot of players following him to Wisconsin. You can phrase it however you'd like. Maybe Cincinnati's not as deep as they would have been had Fickle stayed. But
sure,
yeah, Scott Satterfield's been a Power 5 coach too. So
yeah, you know, and UCF, you know, they're always one of the more talented teams in their old conference. You know, playing Kansas State, Baylor, Kansas, Oklahoma, West Virginia, Cincinnati, Oklahoma State, Texas Tech, and Houston. It's like we are going to get to see them play that schedule. And yeah, I think that as time progresses, these teams will probably turn out to be more equipped talent wise than some of the teams that are in the Power 5 already, just based on some of the geographical advantages that I believe that they'll have once they really settle into the conference. But it is kind of like G5 versus P5, and I'm very curious to see if any of those teams, those four newcomers, will be in the Big 12 championship discussion come November.
Yeah, it will be very interesting, and because those four we've talked about, BYU has a national recruiting base, obviously, because it's a church-based school, and you know, Mormons everywhere look to potentially go to BYU. But the other three are in hotbed recruiting areas, like big-time hotbed recruiting areas. So theoretically, they would have a little bit deeper roster than the average Group of Five program, but not as deep as it's going to be when they've been playing in the Big 12 for 4 years.
But you could potentially say, like, Houston might be the fourth or third most talented team in the new Big 12 in 8 years. Is that reasonable? Yeah, the Oklahoma list and Texas list, Big 12.
I mean, Houston is one of the best talent cities in America. So, absolutely. Now, let's talk about the Cougars, actually, because I wrote this in Dear Andy last week because somebody asked me about this situation and, you know, did I believe the rumors that Texas and Oklahoma were holding it up because of the where they were going to get sent? And I said, you know, you got to send them on the road to at least two new members. They didn't send Texas on the road to two new members, but they did follow my suggestion to make them play at Houston, which I feel like to Texas, and I'm not disparaging Houston. We all know how Longhorns think. Like, this is the most humiliating thing you can do to Texas. Make them play a road game at Houston.
Yeah. Imagine losing.
Well, but now, Houston fans better step up. Don't let your stadium get turned burnt orange, because that is also a possibility.
Yeah, but it's like kind of like you look down on traveling to in-state teams, and now you're forced to do it. You better back it up, you know? And, of course, Houston is well aware of that thought process. And, you know, I think they have a very beautiful stadium, if you've been there.
They do. It's very nice. Yeah, I've been there.
With the skyline in the background and... Yep. You know, so, I mean, you're going to, be in the Power Five now. So be the Power Five, you know, and I'm very excited to see what the new Power Five Big 12 or the new makeup of it is in 5 years or how we look at it. But so for now it's the Power Five.
Absolutely. Texas, by the way, after that game in Houston on October 21st, BYU comes to Austin. Ari, what is BYU's current win streak against Texas?
I don't know. How can I know that? Is it seven?
It's two. The last game was an absolute nightmare for the Longhorns, but they've lost two in a row. They lost to BYU in Austin and in Provo in 2013 and 2014. So 2013, I believe, was the Provo game, and that was when Taysom Hill just ran all over the Longhorns, and they wound up firing Manny Diaz as defensive coordinator after the game.
Yeah. That's good. That's a good memory. So, what game are you most excited about? Is that the one?
I think Texas at Houston or Oklahoma at Cincinnati. And, like, I hope Oklahoma-Cincinnati is a night game, because Nippert just rocks for big games at night.
Yeah,
it's a cool, like, if you've never been to Nippert Stadium, it's a really cool old stadium, just kind of tucked, because, you know, it's tucked into the architecture of the campus, which, unlike a lot of like big land grant universities, they don't have a lot of room to sprawl. Like, they're in the middle of the city. And it's a very cool, kind of dug into the ground, feels very old school. And like Oklahoma coming into that, and them being just pumped for their first Big 12 game. I am so excited for that game.
Yeah, I can't remember what year it was, but I was a beat writer at Cleveland.com at the time, and there were rumors that Cincinnati would be potentially a candidate to join the Big 12. And this was right, I think, if my memory serves me correctly, it was when Houston and Tom Herman played in Cincinnati.
Yes, that would be right. That was when the Big 12 did the dog and pony show. It was like 15, 16.
And it was 15.
The Big 12 did the dog and pony show where they made everybody make a presentation, even though most of them were like, why are we doing this? We're not going to expand. We don't want to add more miles to feed. And they didn't end up expanding. But
Nippert showed out that night.
Oh, yeah.
Because I went and I wrote a column about it. They showed out that night like they were trying to prove that they belonged. And now I like think about that night, which was, you know, almost 8 years ago now. And it's like, here we are. Like, you got your chance and you get to play Oklahoma, you know, in a similarly situated game. And you can show out and play a team that's leaving for the SEC. And you know what? Who knows? Who knows what could happen?
Got a good question from Steven. Which of the Big 12 newcomers do we feel has the easiest schedule? We're just talking about the conference schedule here. I don't think any of these are particularly easy.
No, but it's got to be UCF, right? They don't play Texas.
They don't get Texas or Oklahoma.
But they UCF plays Oklahoma on the road.
They're at Oklahoma. So,
but BYU gets Texas and Oklahoma, and Houston gets Texas at home. So it might be Houston.
So
but they have to. Houston has to open up the Big 12 with TCU. So maybe
UCF's
that's not
got to go to Lubbock in November. That's not. That's no picnic.
Yeah,
like that. And then also Houston has to go to Manhattan. That'll be a fun game. I mean, sorry, UCF has to go to Manhattan. That'll be a fun game. That's September 23rd. I like the new blood. Like, it's exciting to see the new things. Houston also has to go to Manhattan. That's on October 28th. So,
yeah. Do you think that any of these teams are gonna be above competitive?
I think UCF might be able to. They've got, well, Cincinnati might also. You know, BYU and Houston will see they're breaking in new quarterbacks. Houston's defense has to get better than it was this year. Like, Houston was 12-2 year before last because they had a really good defense. Clayton Tune was a good quarterback. Clayton Tune's done. I'm in Mobile right now. You can see if you're watching the video feed, you see I'm in a hotel room. I watched Clayton Tune at the Senior Bowl today.
Are you sure he's leaving?
I am positive. I watched him practice for the Senior Bowl. He's going to the NFL after his 27th season in Houston. And now, so they're breaking in a new QB. Jaren Hall was also here in Mobile today. BYU also breaking in a new QB. Puka Nacua here as well. That was their top receiver this year. So we'll see. And like, BYU's defense has got to be better than it was last year. If BYU's defense doesn't get better, then no, they're not going to be competitive. But if they get back to what we're used to seeing from them, the physicality up front, then I could see them being competitive. That's the thing about the schools they added relative to the schools they had. It feels like all of them could reasonably be expected to compete pretty quickly.
I mean, all four of them have had outstanding seasons that were national stories in November in the last 10 years.
Correct. Correct. Houston won the American and then won that Peach Bowl against Florida State.
And UCF they got Herman. Well, they got multiple coaches, big time power five jobs too.
Right. Yeah. UCF had the undefeated season and then they beat Auburn. And then the next year they only lost the only
championship.
Game. Yeah. The next year, the only game they lost was to LSU in the Fiesta Bowl, which, by the way, that LSU team the next year was maybe the greatest college football team ever.
You remember that big hit on Joe Burrow?
I do. I do. They changed the blindside rule because of that.
Apparently, there is this belief that that was the hit that made Joe Burrow transform into who he is today. Like, ever since that happened.
I don't know. You tell me. You covered Joe at Ohio State. Joe was always that guy, wasn't he?
I just mean from that moment on, Joe Burrow played differently. And of course, I think
hiring Joe Brady and installing a modern offense might have had something to do with
it. I think
it
was because he got knocked into next week unexpectedly, and it like jarred something.
His teammates, listen, I will tell you, and this I have heard from players on that LSU team in 18 and 19. Like, the way he responded to that hit, they already liked Joe Burrow, but that was when they were like, that's my dog. That is my guy.
It is a moment. I'm not saying that that's the reason he's good, but it was a moment where it was like, because if you remember back to Joe Burrow's first year in 18, it wasn't the greatest year.
It was a pretty pedestrian offense. Yeah.
You know, it was like he was fine. You know, it wasn't like he was a star. And then we all thought, I mean, I don't know what people thought about in the summer of 18. Or the offseason of 18 going into 19, like the way that LSU team was viewed. But if I remember correctly, it kind of came out of nowhere to being as good as it was. And maybe part of the reason why is their two best players were a transfer and a player that, you know, was ranked in the top 2100 in the recruiting rankings. Yeah. But, you know, there was something that transformed there that really, cultivated that season and ultimately what we have in Joe Burrow. So, yeah, it's a shame that the Bengals aren't playing in the Super Bowl, Andy, because that would have been an all-time handsome quarterback matchup. And I didn't know this until this past week.
This is an all-time handsome quarterback matchup.
No, but Joe Burrow, this is what I was going to say. Apparently Joe Burrow is like quite the heartthrob for a lot of ladies. And I didn't really realize that.
You didn't?
No, I thought
is about as swagged out as humanly possible.
No, I know he's swagged out, but like Jalen Hurts has got the face of an angel. So I thought that like there would be no question or no debate that Jalen Hurts was a more handsome man. You know, and then apparently there was some major debate on that. And I went to dinner with another couple to watch. I went to dinner to watch the game with a couple and Brittany, and both women said Joe Burrow was far more attractive than Jalen Hurts. And I was stunned by that.
Wow.
Because Jalen Hurts is like, you want to talk about swag? Did you see him on the sidelines of the Syracuse basketball game on Monday night?
He's very swagged out. I don't feel like he was not that swaggy at Alabama.
Well, it's amazing what can happen when your bank account goes up that much. And you'd be getting your own custom Jordan 1s. You wouldn't have to be buying them off StockX rest of us.
They'd just be making them for me. I like it. This is true.
They'd say ass on the back.
You can't do this.
Please sell Andy Staples Show and Friends merch. We're going to get you ass Jordan 1s.
Yes, Nathan Smith has asked. We should do that. Now, we could do that on the Nike by you with several different types of sneakers, but we can't do it with Jordan 1s because they're not going to let you customize your own Jordan
1s. No. That's
sacred. We're not that special. So, Ari, this has me so pumped up for next season, and I know we've got to wait 8 months, unfortunately. But
it's like we're previewing conference openers on January 31st. So
I'm just excited. I mean, Texas, if this is the last year in the Big 12, which I think it is, they're going through the ringer, it feels like. And, you know, they've got to go to Tuscaloosa on September 9th. But I mean, as we say this, this is another interesting thing. Alabama still doesn't have an offensive coordinator and still doesn't have a defensive coordinator.
I'm very confident that they'll figure it out.
That they will hire somebody by the Texas game? I hope so.
They not only hire somebody by the Texas game, but get somebody that's going to do really well there.
Yeah, it sounds like Ryan Grubb's going to stay at Washington. You know, yesterday it looked like for a minute that was happening, but it's not. We'll be right back after this message from one of our lovely sponsors.
You know, I had a hypothetical question that I wanted to ask you later on in the show that is in regards of Alabama. So just remind me of that because we are working on a story to tease and you're a part of it. Yep. That
I need to get off the Schneid and get my stuff in.
Yeah, you are still eligible to submit it. He was going to message you tomorrow We are ranking the 69 Power 5 jobs.
Nice.
In terms of easiest to hardest, 1 through 69 to recruit to. And in these rankings, which isn't like every other ranking that's been done in this topic, you're allowed to take into account perceived NIL prowess,
right?
Head coaching sales pitches.
So what you're saying is
what they
you're
are
giving
now.
Me license to rank Colorado much higher than I would have based on
you
their
could put Colorado
success.
In the top five if you want, and you would have a strong opinion in the thought process or how we're going to do it is we're going to break it up and then we're going to average it because I think 8 or 9 of us are ranking them.
Ask me your hypothetical now because I feel like we
who's number one?
Georgia. Like that's
you know, I don't think it's easy if Nick Saban is you get to
no it's
Alabama
it's Georgia,
it gets
right,
to,
it's Georgia right now, but Alabama so you, like it's not like Alabama or Ohio State are a distant anything like. They're right there with them. Like Georgia, Alabama, and Ohio State occupy their own universe compared to everybody else.
I disagree with you. I think it's unquestionably Alabama. If Georgia might be the number one program in college football right now, but this is a different ranking. The ranking is which place with all the assets that it has, including who their head coach is and their resume.
Georgia
is the easiest place.
Same reason Nick Saban thought that Georgia was the best job in college football.
So then Nick Saban, who just signed 9 5-star prospects and set a record for most 5-star prospects in a single class.
He's the best coach of all time and has to work
harder than Kirby Smart.
He's
part of the sales pitch.
He is.
Come play for Nick Saban is a better sales pitch.
I don't know. Play for Kirby Smart's a pretty good sales pitch.
It's a very good sales pitch for number two. Number two out of 69 ain't that bad. I mean, I don't know. Like Georgia has the advantage. This is why I wanted to ask you, because I thought we would disagree. I think I might be the only person that puts Alabama number one. But if in the assignment we're supposed to take—
I don't have a problem with you putting Alabama number one. I just think right now, especially given the volume of draft picks that Georgia just produced and is about to produce, they are hot. They are the hottest. That is the easiest to sell. The most recent, it's what have you done for me lately? Mm-hmm. So yep. Now, I mean, Alabama is about to potentially have the number one, and there's a very good chance Alabama could have the number one and number two pick in the NFL draft this year.
Well,
that's
here's
obviously
the thing.
A very good thing to sell.
The assignment is we have 280 characters, which is the length of a tweet, to write our best sales pitch for the team. And we don't have to do all 69. Are we 240 or 280?
I think we're going to use too many characters, and it's not going to fit in a tweet.
And we're all going to get eight. We're going to split it up. But I feel like if I were a recruiting coordinator who wanted to work at a place and make it for like the ease of it,
yeah,
you can't really nag either of them. Like no. Georgia and Alabama are as close to perfection.
We're completely splitting hairs right now.
Yeah, no, I know. But I just like, I cannot believe if you strip everything away and you present Georgia coachless and Alabama coachless and staffless, Georgia wins 1,000 times out of 1,000
right.
based
but
on
because
location.
Nick Saban's at but Alabama.
Because Nick Saban is the head coach, like, I know that Kirby Smart won it 2 years in a row, okay? But, like, has he passed at Nick Saban at Alabama as the Death Star of the sport in your mind? Like, they might be the number one program right now because of what they've accomplished in the what have you done for me lately business.
Okay.
But, like, Alabama's still Alabama.
This year, they're on your schedule. Who are you more afraid of, Alabama or Georgia?
Well, we're not 100% sure who the coach or the quarterbacks are at each one, right?
Yeah.
So that's harder to answer.
I would think Carson Beck's the quarterback at Georgia. And Alabama, that's a we don't know right now.
I mean, honestly, Alabama.
Why?
It's hard to maintain elite teams for three straight years. Mm-hmm. Nick Saban is probably hungrier than he ever has after sitting on the podium hearing about how Georgia took
Alabama
over the SEC.
Alabama as the hunter instead of the hunted does strike.
And they have more talent on their roster.
Eh. Again, splitting hairs.
It's splitting hairs, but you asked me who I would not want to play, and Georgia didn't have to play Alabama this year. And also, too, like Georgia was one field goal
away. What do you think
would
have happened if Georgia had played Alabama this year?
I think that it would have been a great game. Just like the Ohio State game. Yeah.
I think it would have looked more like the Georgia-Tennessee game.
You think?
Well, what Alabama receiver was going to go off like Marvin Harrison Jr. did?
Yeah. You know, Ohio State had certain strengths that Alabama didn't have, but
Alabama
has strength. I mean, Will Ohio Anderson would have looked real nice in a Buckeyes uniform in that game too. You know, like you can't do that. I mean, I guess
Georgia has NFL tackles. Like they did fine.
Andy, do you see why I wanted to ask this at the end?
No, I'm glad you asked it now.
Yeah.
Why are you leaving the interesting parts till the end?
It is interesting. And like, here's the thing. Like you said, if you pick Alabama, you can't say anything bad about Georgia. And if you pick Georgia, you can't say anything bad about Alabama. So maybe it's just personal preference.
I think it is.
I think Nick Saban has just done way too much to not be number one right now.
I also think Ohio State is a very easy sell as well.
My rankings, without giving it away all to you, were Alabama, Georgia, Ohio State, 1, 2, 3.
Yeah. Yeah. And I feel like those three occupy a completely different universe than anybody else.
But it does get challenging, Andy, because as you go down the list, and shout out to Mitch Light for coming up with this idea because
it's
awesome.
A good idea. Yeah.
It gets really murky because when
I guarantee you I will struggle.
I struggle, and this is the thing, I struggle with my top 10 because there are certain programs that just we've ranked this so many times without attaching it to the coach. But when you attach it to the coach, like how high do you go up with Colorado? Like does Texas stay number four? Like, but does USC number four? Like what
Texas
about LSU?
Is number four on your list?
Texas would be number four on my list if you took all the coaches away and it was just based on program resources. Yeah.
Or just resource? Is it recent success and recent draft pick production? Like, draft pick production is the most important recruiting tool there is. And Texas fails miserably in that.
This is the fun of this. Yeah.
Yeah.
But also, too, like, Texas A&M and Texas. Like, who's better? When you think about the NIL, like, Texas signed a better class
pick,
this year.
Draft pick production?
But I'm saying, like, in A&M. With NIL and head coaches.
Yeah. Well, no,
and
right.
In the state, like, what is an easier place to recruit to right now?
NIL, based on what we've seen so far, like, I think that bumps Tennessee up. I think that bumps Oregon up.
Right. So A&M, would you put ahead of Texas?
I would put A&M ahead of Texas anyway because they produce more draft picks. Like, yeah. It is easier to sell recent draft pick production than anything. That is why Georgia and Alabama and Ohio State have such a prohibitive advantage on everybody else. Because you can go to the player and say, look at how many draft picks we made.
Okay, I'm going to give you some of the ones that I struggled with, and I'm not going to tell you where I ranked them.
Okay.
But here are some of the ones I struggle with. Like, where do you put Florida? That's a hard one, considering what's going on right now. Where do you put Auburn?
Another tough one. I do think one thing I will say about Auburn, and it'll be interesting to see how much this dips because of the Brian Harsin era, but Auburn always has some dudes.
And like, they always recruit well, even when it's bad.
Like, Derek Hall and Tank Bigsby are dudes. Like, you could put those two on any team and they'd be very good players on any team in the country. And so, like, the fact that Auburn can always get some dudes, I think matters. I think I also think they seem to have a pretty good NIL situation right now. That collective has gotten very organized. I will say, just kind of spoiler alert, talked to Hugh Freeze for a little while at the Senior Bowl on Tuesday. And I may have a column coming out here in the next few days.
You got you to believe.
It's not even that.
You believe, I bet.
I always, like, the off-field stuff with Freeze that everybody gets mad about, like, I get it. If you're an Auburn fan and you didn't appreciate them hiring him because of that, or if you're a fan of another school and you just don't like him because of that, I understand that. I've said all along, though, in terms of understanding what the job is at Auburn, just the on-field part of it, he understands and knows what he's supposed to be doing. And all you have to do is look at this time last year, they were trying to find a way to fire Brian Harsin for free. They were moving junior days because of lack of interest. They're basically turning people away at the door at junior days now. It's a very different situation. And so,
I think you could make a case for them being a top 10.
Oh, you absolutely can. You can. Florida, that's a tougher case to make right now. They're still producing draft picks, though. And it's interesting because, like, again, being around all these NFL people at the Senior Bowl and hearing how Anthony Richardson is going to go in the first round still just makes my head throb. Like, I'm like, guys, I just don't know. But
I mean, would you not want to take Cam Newton at 16?
Cam Newton was the most dominant player in college football.
I totally just lobbed that at you. I'm just kidding.
Dragged a team. Okay. Trivia question, Ari.
Oh, God. I'm terrible. I think I've asked you this before.
Other than Cam Newton, how many combined starts did the other starters on the 2010 Auburn offense make in the NFL?
Is it zero?
It's one.
Yeah.
Now, there's tragedy involved here because unfortunately Philip Lutzenkirchen passed away before he started his NFL career. He would have played a lot of games in the NFL, but that group was not loaded with talent.
That is a truly insane statistic.
Exactly. Now, Nick Fairley was a first round draft pick on the other side of the ball. They did have some defensive players who wound up being very good, but it wasn't a ton. And offensively,
Cam was the definition of Superman.
Yeah, Cam was it. And so, no, please. And I realize I was guilty of this. You were guilty of this. We got a little over our skis after the 40 Utah game. I am still
guilty of it. What is this past tense?
We're not going to mention Anthony Richardson and Cam Newton in the same sentence. We're not. That is unfair to Cam Newton. That is disrespectful to Cam Newton right now.
I bet you on April 1st, if you type in to Google Anthony Richardson, Cam Newton, and that plus sign that means that they both have to be in there, you'll get 1,000 hits.
I know. What I'm saying is that is very disrespectful to Cam Newton.
Well, just an athletic comparison. Nobody's saying he's better than Cam Newton. They're saying that he's got the physical makeup that reminds you of somebody like Cam Newton.
No, I get it. He's the first guy that size to have that good of an arm and run that fast since Cam Newton. I get it. I also watch the games. So,
Goes out the window during the draft process. You know that.
I know. But, like, I do believe Osiris Torrance, the guard is from Florida, is probably going to be first-round draft pick. Now, you can say, oh, he came from Louisiana Lafayette. Well, guess who recruited him to Louisiana Lafayette? Billy Napier, who is the Florida coach now. So, I think that does help. And Florida's been a program that they've steadily put some dudes in the NFL. You know, and be it like Kyle Pitts, you know, high draft pick type dudes.
So I'm gonna give you two more.
They're similar to Auburn in that vein.
I'm gonna give you two more that I struggle with, and then after the story runs, we can compare the lists that we submitted.
Yeah.
Which I think would be a good show. But you know who I had a really hard time with?
Who's that?
Nebraska.
Oh. Yeah.
Because that's new Nebraska, and we haven't really seen what new Nebraska looks like yet.
Right.
We saw
Matt Rhule at Baylor, and so our assumption is he'll do the same thing at Nebraska that he did at Baylor, which is go into a fairly unfamiliar territory, learn the lay of the land very quickly, and recruit a roster that can compete in that league. That's what he did at Baylor. Baylor was down worse than Nebraska was when Matt Rhule got there. So if he repeats that, then yeah, it's a pretty good job to recruit to. This is where NIL comes in. And you and I have talked about this before. Because of the way Nebraska cares deeply about football, the way that fan base is so passionate, it feels to me like a very good transfer destination, like an NIL situation where a transfer who is not necessarily looking for as much flash, but they're looking for, okay, do they take football very seriously here? And if you set foot on that campus, you know they do. And can I get to the NFL from here? I think they've produced enough NFL players in the last few years that you feel okay with that answer. It's not a great answer, but then if Matt Rhule can produce a few more, then that becomes a very interesting destination.
Is competent Nebraska top 25?
Competent Nebraska is top 25, yes.
Okay.
Competent Nebraska.
Okay.
But that's, again, we got to, then I almost.
I think, you have to assumption that this is what you're going to get. You might not get elite Nebraska, but you'll get competent Nebraska at the very least. All right,
what's the other one?
Florida State.
That's an interesting one because it does seem like they have changed philosophies. Like Jimbo was recruiting in a way in the early 2010s where he was just getting
top five classes. Yeah.
Ridiculous classes every year. They're not in that boat now, but they've also devised a transfer portal NIL strategy where they're getting really good transfers.
But that's not what we're ranking here. So hard about it.
But being able to recruit transfers is just as important as being able to recruit high schoolers.
I just don't know if, like, do you think we will see Mike Norvell, if you had a prediction, make a prediction, sign a top five high school class ever?
Not based on what we've seen so far.
That's tough. That's a tough pill to swallow.
Yeah.
Because you want to use the transfer portal and steadily improving yourself into being a good team again to then become very good at high school recruiting. Mm-hmm. Like, that's the whole point of it. Like, you don't want to live in that world every year, do you? You don't want to, you want to parlay that into success and getting your name out there again so that you.
I think they can if they keep winning.
I really just don't think that's a sustainable model long term.
But I don't think that's the hope long term. I think if they feel like if they win, like if they're double digit wins again, if they wind up in the ACC championship game this year,
yeah.
If they beat Florida and Miami again, like they're going to get high school dudes too.
Yeah. So like hopefully as they continue to do this, the high school dudes will increase. And the hope is that you use the transfer portal well enough to put you in a position where you get good enough to sign a top five class so that you don't have to rely on it that way anymore.
We'll be right back after these words. Welcome back. So before we get you ready for National Signing Day Part 2, big news from a friend of the show that hit the wires on Monday night, Ari. So Ryland Goede, you remember him as one half of the Real Talk podcast. We did a crossover event with Ryland and his Georgia teammate, Tate Ratledge. They have a great podcast. They came on our show for a national championship game preview. It was spectacular. We were planning to do a, you know, back half of the home and home later. So Ryland went into the transfer portal. Now, he was not the only Georgia athlete who went into the transfer portal and emerged in the same place. Alexa Fortin, a setter on the Georgia volleyball team, also went in the transfer portal. And we learned on Monday night that Ryland and Alexa, who happen to be engaged and are getting married in May, are both going to be Mississippi State Bulldogs. Now, here is the part that blew my mind that a lot of helpful readers and listeners on Twitter alerted me to when I said, is this the first husband-wife package deal in the history of the transfer portal? It is not. Not even the first one this year. So, Dallin Holker, who played football at BYU, and Taylor Holker, his wife, who is on the BYU track team, they both transferred to Colorado State in December. So, two sets of husband-wife transfers so far this year. That's spectacular, Ari.
Yeah, I was like thinking about, would my wife transfer if I wanted to go somewhere?
Or and would you transfer if your wife wanted to go
somewhere? I would. I transferred to Dallas.
Okay. All right.
But when we were dating, she said, I love you. I will never live in Ohio. And that's why I live in Texas.
So this is a reverse all my exes live in Texas, like, and that's why I hang my hat in Tennessee, and that's why I live in Texas, because my wife has refused to ever live in Ohio.
Well, you know, Texas is a good place to be in my job, so
that you'd surely love to be.
I don't know if Texas would be in my top five states. That would be a good random ranking.
Oh, good lord.
Top five states I would want to live in America.
We are going to save that one. Put a pin in that, Ari. There's too much football to talk. But put a pin in that one, because that may be something we do later in the week. I like this. That should be maybe our next random ranking topic.
Yeah.
I'm good with that. Okay. But let's talk National Signing Day.
Let's do it.
I want to talk about a guy who I think is one of the more fascinating people who will be picking a school on Wednesday, and that's Nicholas Harbor. So he is an edge rusher, tight end. In recruiting parlance, he's an athlete from, is it Archbishop Carroll?
Yes.
In DC. So he's six. What is he? 6'6".
He's 6'5" and a half, 6'6", 230.
But
runs like Usain Bolt.
Elite speed, not good speed, not great speed. Elite speed, ran a 10.22 hundred meters in August, I believe. This is a guy who could, you know, with working his way up, could potentially be like a U.S. track team type guy.
With no disrespect to Arch Manning, I am surprised he's not the number one overall player in the class.
It's because he can, like, and this is the weird part. Like, when we usually talk, quote unquote, track guys, we're usually talking about kind of skill position, receiver, running back type player, corner. This guy's an edge rusher, tight end, who big enough to play, you know, at those positions now, but will be kind of undersized in major college football. As he gets older, will get big enough to be the right size for those positions in major college football, but might also still be just that fast.
I'm also excited to see like where he ends up playing in the college level, because I know there's some debate about like where he projects. Mm-hmm. Because the thing that is interesting about the speed thing is there are people who are fast on tracks, and you know, when you're that fast, you're fast everywhere, right, but doesn't translate to, because it's like, if you're that fast and then you're rushing the passer, like that might help you get to the quarterback because you're fast off the ball, or you know, you can get around an offensive tackle. But like, is that going to translate?
Quickness and suddenness are different traits than flat out blazing speed.
So based on his body size and that speed, what would you say the perfect position on the football field would be if you had that to mold with?
Travis Kelce. The Travis
like
Kelce
tight position. End was my thing. But it's like Travis Kelce's not fast.
Right. Travis Kelce is an incredible route runner, a great understanding of the offensive scheme he plays in.
He just finds pockets. He just finds pockets and sits down. Yep.
And Travis Kelce was a quarterback coming out of high school and had to move. Remember Cincinnati, Brian Kelly's last year, used Travis Kelce as a Wildcat quarterback.
Yeah.
And I mean, you Butch watch Jones the Chiefs took play. Over and they were like, we're going to make you a tight end.
When I watch the Chiefs play, I feel like every Travis Kelce reception looks the same. It's like, oh no, Mahomes is about to get sacked. Oh wait, there's Travis Kelce underneath running a hitch wide open. And then he makes one guy miss and then runs 7 yards.
The touchdown catch in the AFC Championship game was crazy. Because you look at Jesse Bates, who was covering him, and you're like, why isn't there another Bengal within 5 yards? Like, how are you not triple teaming this guy?
I feel like he's wide open on 70% of his receptions. And when I say wide open, I mean like 5 yards around him. Where he can still run with the ball.
That's why I'd be very interested to see Nicholas Harbor lined up in the slot or even all the way outside, because he's legit faster than most. He's as fast maybe as Jalin Hyatt over that space, and faster than Jalin Hyatt in the 100. Like, that's insane.
Because like the first person that comes to my mind when you talk about that size of a body and very fast is DK. DK Metcalf.
Yes.
And obviously the one play that everybody remembers is the one where he chased down. They're playing the Cardinals and he chased down the interception 80 yards.
Yeah, chased down Buda Baker.
It's just like, did you see how fast that guy was moving?
Yeah.
By the way,
if you want to see the greatest play in NFL history, there's a play where Larry Allen chases down a guy I believe it was an interception. I don't think it was a fumble recovery, but Larry Allen chases down a linebacker who had a massive head start on him. It's the most athletic play in NFL history because it involves a 350-pound man. But like, that's the crazy part about Nicholas Harbor.
It's NFL Oregon, measurables already.
Yeah. Oregon, South Carolina. Who else is in the hunt?
Oregon, South Carolina, Michigan was in the hunt. Maryland was in the hunt. And it's funny because during his time in his recruitment, it felt like there were certain teams that were ahead. At different points, like Maryland seemed to really be gaining some traction in December.
Now that's home, and that's home for him. That's,
yeah, and I think it was because he was able to visit a bunch and it was easy for him to get to. But I do think that the final two, or the expectations are that it's between South Carolina and Oregon.
Yeah. And both of them, I mean, you're also probably running track. So like, I am fascinated by this one. I can't wait to see where he winds up. Another one that
and regardless of where he winds up is a big deal because South Carolina
and what has he become? Yeah.
But South Carolina has got a lot of momentum right now.
Yes.
And they already have a fringe top 100 player committed at the tight end position in 2024. And like, if they're able to like add on to the ending of the season that they had last year by getting a national prospect and potentially the most athletic player overall in the entire class, like that's something. And then of course Oregon, if they get him, then it's another 5-star prospect at the 11th hour after they ruled the early signing period. And you know, it's been kind of fun to watch Dan Lanning cook out there. So Yes, I think that it's very interesting. Now, the thing that I'm a little upset about is that this signing day does lack a little juice because everybody's already signed. And the two big names that I was most excited to see commit on Wednesday or sign on Wednesday were Deuce Robinson, the actual freak tight end.
Right.
That is going to start as a freshman, regardless of where he goes, in my opinion.
Even and then, if of it's course, Georgia?
Probably, yeah. I don't know how he doesn't
get... Georgia's just going to be...
They're not going to... Yeah, no, they're not going to get rid of Brock Bowers. They're just
going to have two tight ends on the field. Yeah,
they're just going to find a way to put them on the field.
Well,
yeah.
And they had Darnell Washington and Brock Bowers on the field an awful lot together. So
and I would say that Washington was a starter, even if it's like...
Oh, yeah,
I don't know, starter's a loose 100%. Term. Yeah. And then, of course, Jaden Rashada, I was told... on Tuesday, while doing some reporting, that they aren't sure if he's going to announce on Wednesday, but would be surprised if he did so. So
right, and remember, this is not like the early signing period where you have 3 days to sign. You can months.
Sign whenever, right? Yeah. You can show up without signing anything if you want.
Right.
Yeah, but those were the three biggest names out there. There's a top 100 player named Roderick Pleasant out of Southern California, who's also down to USC and Oregon, which is a nice old school Pac-12 battle.
Well, that'll be a cross conference battle in a year.
Yeah, and then there's another tight end that Georgia has been recruiting, and that's Walker Lyon. I don't know how many tight ends this program needs.
All of them? They're going to take them all.
Former Stanford commit.
This is why our guy Rylan Goedee was in the portal.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, if you're a tight end and you're a top 100 player, you have a spot, apparently. That's pretty much the early signing period. You got some flip watches and stuff. Well,
Cormani McClain is committed to Colorado, but he was committed to Miami going into the early signing period, and he didn't sign. So is he gonna sign?
Because he is filming a documentary, right?
As one does.
So... Nothing that, you know, spikes the interest in a documentary like some last minute grab ass.
Little drama. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. But yeah, I don't know. That one seems like Dion's got it under lock. But we'll see. You know, imagine he doesn't sign on Wednesday and we got to keep going down that road. But, you know, you never know.
Oh, listen, it wouldn't be a real February National Signing Day without some grab ass. It wouldn't. Like,
it was funny because I
the mom, dinner, a mom stealing the facts, or we need something like that to happen.
Britt was we were eating dinner together before the podcast tonight, and Britt goes, "So what do you have going on tomorrow now that daycare's closed because it's cold here?"
No.
And I said, "Tomorrow's National Signing Day." And she goes, "How many National Signing Days are there?" I said, "Britt, it probably feels like more to me than it does to you. I'll tell you, but it's going to be a good day."
Yeah, this should be fun. Maybe a little bit of drama, certainly not as much as there used to be, but please let one fax machine malfunction or one parent steal a national letter of intent.
You just can fax with a cell phone now, drama. Right?
You can send a PDF now of these things. They do the fax machine out of
nostalgia,
an homage to the past. That's all it is.
But I thought there was an app where you could just take a picture of it and then type the fax number in, and then it just spits it out of the fax machine.
You can. Yeah. I have that app.
Yeah. You do?
So.
You doing a lot of faxing?
Not doing much faxing. I should do that. Like, I call the Jim Rome show and be like, "What's your fax number?" I gotta get off.
Yeah. Oh, you can fax from Gmail. Fun. The more you know.
Dun 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 dun.
The whole thing about 2023, and this isn't a new sensation for me. It's been, if I have to print something, to be the most aggravating thing that you have to do.
Just send me something, send me a PDF I can fill in, or a DocuSign. Like, don't make me print stuff.
Yeah. I mean, if you sell a pair of shoes on StockX, you have to print something. Mm. And then you go to the UPS store and they charge you like $1 a page. It's like, what are we doing here? Who
you
needs
could
paperwork?
Still have a printer, by the way.
Where am I going to plug a printer in this?
I will say, having kids and maybe by the time your kid gets middle school age, this won't happen anymore. They print out so many things and still have to physically write things.
Do your kids have trapper keepers?
No, we tried to get them for them, and they're like, "No, this isn't cool. This is lame."
But there's a lot of pages that they have, paperwork, syllabuses, all that stuff is still physical.
Now, I will say, if you forgot an assignment at home, at least now there are different websites. The one they use is called Canvas, and I'm sure a lot of parents with kids that their kids use this too. Like, they can just go to that teacher's class on Canvas. They can go to the date. And they can pull up the PDF of whatever the assignment is and print it out if they left it at school, which is huge.
So if your daughter has
like, there's never an excuse like, I can't do my homework. No, you can. Just call it up on the web.
If your daughter has to like write an essay.
Yep.
Does she still print it out double spaced and hand it in?
See, that's where it gets annoying. Super annoying. She has to print it out and then submit it as a PDF. So she prints it out and then takes, now you can, and I've shown them how to do this. Like, you can print to PDF, which is you basically just save a PDF. You go to the print function on your computer and you save it as a PDF and just send it that way. But a lot of times they have to do handwritten stuff that they then have to take a picture of and upload as a PDF.
Yeah. It's people don't know the struggle where like you had to do the double space. You had to, you know, and I had the best trick.
Double space, 12.1 point, so they don't notice how much bigger the font is. And then you mess with the kern. Do you know what the kern is?
I don't know what the kern is, but I was going to tell you my trick. Space
between letters.
Oh, man, I used to bold every period. You can't tell, and if you bold every period, it gives you, if it's like a 3 or 4 page paper, it gives you like another half page.
If it's close to the end of the line, it's going to knock it to a new line. Yeah, I love it. That's amazing. That is the best trick ever. And I'm not surprised I didn't know that.
And the best thing that you can do is just like you write the paper, and then at the end of it, you hit Control F period replace. Remember? Like yes. You replace it. Oh, yeah. And if you replace it with the bold period, you watched your paper, yep. You know, increase a page. It was the best feeling ever.
By the way, SIGEP 415 points this out. We should have talked about this much earlier in the show, and I apologize for that. Has Jim Harbaugh finally resigned himself to being the Michigan coach another year? Thanks, Sean Payton. Yes. So we said this the other day, Ari. Like, he met with Michigan again. Like, that's a thing. But Sean Payton taking the Broncos job means, yes, Jim Harbaugh is staying at Michigan.
I mean, he can still coach in NFL Europe.
Well, yes, he could. The Amsterdam Admirals, the Rhine Fire. So, no, Ari,
San Diego Fleet.
What if the Saints had driven a harder bargain with the Broncos and the Broncos have been like, screw it? I think they would have gone back to Harbaugh at that point.
I don't know. Like, you know, never be the, what do they say? Always a bridesmaid, never the bride. You know, he might have been the bride.
Man. So, yes, Michigan people, feel free to breathe. You're safe. Or maybe you're mad about this. I don't know.
Go get Jaden Daniels. Everything's okay. Go get Jaden Daniels.
Jaden Daniels.
What am I saying? Jaden Daniels?
The LSU quarterback?
Jaden Davis, the 5-star quarterback in the 2024 class.
I was like, what?
You got to give me these names.
That's very close. Jaden Daniels and Jaden Davis are very close.
It's like, I can't control what I have this thing in my head, Andy, where I say something different than what I'm thinking.
Oh, I think there's probably a scientific term for that I don't know, but
yeah,
basically my head is still on the verge of exploding over the bolded period.
Yeah. Well, hey, you know, you gotta see, that's the thing too about high school and college. It's like, you think the curriculum is what's most important? No, it's the way that you navigate yourself.
It's the tricks you learn to get out of work.
Yes, the tricks you learn. It's what you have to do. It's turning things in on time, finding a way to get stuff done, and like being adult on your own for the first time. That is the most important learning experience. It's not whether or not you could pass the biology course or bio 101. It's all the things that you do in college to try to.
You're talking about bolding a period.
I know.
To beef up your papers.
Yeah. It was clever, and I'm proud of it.
You should be. You really should be. All right. National Signing Day Part 2 is Wednesday, which means you're going to get a special Stars Matter with Ari and Mitch Light, and then Ari and I will be back on Friday.
You know, I know that your son trying to say goodbye, and you probably have a lot of work to do, Andy, but like, I actually believe this because like in college, I took a, you're going to laugh at this, a course called Nutrition, Food, and You, which is probably one that I should have listened to.
Oh, listen, listen. Florida, yeah. We had the meat we eat. We had man's food. Don't feel bad about that one.
But, you know, frats used to have the test banks.
The test bank, yes.
You know, and being able to navigate the test bank, memorize the entire test. They hand you the test. I never even went to the class, and I knew the answer to every single question because he didn't change the tests. I had to miss them on purpose.
Ladies and gentlemen, perfect. The University of Arizona.
But I'm saying, like, that to me is more valuable than the curriculum because you learn to navigate life and get stuff done, which is all life is, really. You got 19 things you got to do. Get them done in the most efficient way that you can. But I probably should have listened to Nutrition, Food, and You.
You're listening now. That's all.
Yeah, I don't know anything about nutrition, and I don't really know much about food, and certainly don't know anything about you.
You're drinking your jug of branched chain amino acids. Really
I should have. The reason I'm in this position is because I didn't listen, but, you know, I'm trying to, you know, now I'm taking the course and not cheating.
Yeah, you're memorizing the test bank and not paying attention.
It's also not cheating.
No, it's actually not. It's laziness on the professor's part to keep handing out the same test over and over again.
Just because I learned all the answers and questions to a past test doesn't mean that I cheated.
You cheated, but it's okay.
Are test banks cheating?
Yes, but you took advantage of the professor's laziness. Like, that is, I put that 5% on you and 95% on the professor for being too lazy to write a new test.
This test bank thing, you can go, there's businesses on college campuses where you pay money for old papers and stuff.
Of course.
Or old tests. And, like, they don't know that. It's like, change your test, pal.
There you go. Work harder. Ari's working smarter. You work harder.
I'm a bachelor of science.
Ari will have to work harder rather than smarter if you just work harder.
It would have taken one flunk test to light the fire, and it didn't happen.
And look at where you are now. You got a 98%
in that course.
Because you missed the answers on purpose?
And the 2% that I got wrong is God. It also does take quite dedication to memorize a test.
No, it doesn't. It takes more dedication to learn the material and study for the test. But hey, you bear down Wildcats and Wildcat professors. If you don't want them just memorizing your tests, write a new test. Talk to you tomorrow.